And happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. 106.3 Game Nashville, Twitch, Twitter, YouTube. We got it all covered here. Another great summer week of shows. Willie and D-Mace at full strength. Our station continues to go through the summer patrol of who's in, who's out, who's on vacation, who's recharging, who's back. So
who's on first, who's on second.
Yeah, a shout out to our utility players who have done such a great job. You know, Nick,
we got a deep bench.
Nick being one of them.
Deep bench.
Nick Frazier. We got it. We do have a deep bench.
Yeah,
Nick Keyser doing the job earlier today with Adam Vingan, who's been, I believe, on every show on the station. Has he done like an overnight shift yet? I mean, just to get
yet.
The feel for that?
He's in training for that. We got to teach him how to do all the net cues and stuff.
Adam, next week you've got 11 p.m. through 5 a.m. Just take it all night. Musing throughout the night.
Adam's been a trooper. He's been a trooper.
We used to have some bizarre
just about
shows.
Every show. I'm dropping stuff over here, Willie. I mean, it's.
Yeah,
it's,
you're a little slow in the transition today, D-Mace.
I hadn't been back long enough, man. I'm just frazzled right now. I'm just, you know, goodness gracious. When you get back in the saddle sometimes, that was a long week.
That was quite the weekend. I love when 4th of July falls on a Thursday. It's just perfect because it's automatic. 4 days of there was a couple days I was like, man, it's only Friday.
Yeah.
And I was like, Saturday morning, I was like, we got the whole weekend still. This is great.
I was, you know, after the show, Wednesday, you know, Thursday, I was, well, even Wednesday, after we got off the show, it was like, I turned my mind off.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, is this a vacation? Or am I retired right now?
I forgot I had a day job. Honestly,
exactly.
I did.
I forgot we did a show for a second there.
I kept getting text messages from Willie and D-Mace. I'm like, do I work with these guys?
That was a long break, though. It was much needed. I'm sure everybody needed the break. You know, I saw a meme on one of those sites, socials, one of them, that said, okay, now that 4th of July is over, school starts, Halloween, Christmas, and then Happy New Year's, everybody. And it's true because it goes by that fast. Once the 4th of July hits, the kids are back in school, like it seems like 2 weeks
countdown.
Later. Exactly.
The countdown.
Camps, yeah. All camps, football camps, whether it be high school, they start, what, in the next week or two weeks. NFL camps start in 2 weeks. I mean, now the train is moving, and we're not stopping it until the new year. So, Happy New Year's, everybody, because it's right around the corner, okay?
2024 is almost in the rearview.
2024 is over with, okay?
Christmas in July already happened.
Christmas in July. That is still the worst.
Wasn't that a movie, Christmas in July?
If you turn on the Hallmark channel, you're going to have some movies. Christmas in July, it's happening.
Yes.
It happened. So any adventures you guys had over the? Mine was pretty laid back. I didn't have anything crazy. It was so hot. I just couldn't spend that much time outside. And like you, I just used it to kind of recharged. I watched a lot of movies.
Yeah,
a lot of baseball games. I even watched. I'm actually back into Wimbledon a little bit. I used to back when I was a kid. I played a lot of tennis when I was young. My mom was a really good tennis player. Mm-hmm. And back in the day of McEnroe and Borg, the characters, I really was into tennis. I would never miss a chance to watch Wimbledon or the U.S. Open. I kind of lost touch with it for a long time, but I kind of like the routine of flipping it on in the morning, seeing what's going on, following the tournament a little bit. So that's tided me over. But so I just kind of chilled out. Any crazy adventures? I will say this. In East Nashville,
it had to be crazy over there.
It is crazy.
Yes.
Number one, because you don't have to drive very far to get a view of the downtown fireworks show. Uh-huh. So everybody's got their own kind of way of pulling up to the side of the road. I'm talking about like a busy street.
Yeah.
To where, I mean, they just pull up on the side of the road. And they get an angle to watch it, and they're pulling out the chairs and opening up the hatchback.
So what main drag is that? What main street
is
that?
Well, okay, so if you picture—
That runs east to west,
If you picture Ellington Parkway and Spring Street and right near where Germantown, where the Sounds Ballpark is— over near East, there's a patch. Dickerson Road's in there.
Okay.
Jefferson Street picks up on the other side. Right in there is where you can start getting a view.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, so many people who live back in that neighborhood come over and just set up shop. They're everywhere. And so that was fun seeing all that. I actually went and picked up my daughter. She was at a friend's house. I went and picked her up because her and her brother fight over the third car that we have. They both think it's their car. They don't each have their own car. Like, you know. So she didn't have the car. So she did it. I went and got it. So I got to see all this. But you go anywhere you could see those, you have that going on, setting up for, say, the 9:30 show. In the meantime, everybody's an amateur firecracker person.
Firecracker.
Every 30 seconds, they're booming around. Boom, 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 boom. You know, more than I've ever seen before, I'd have to say. Whoever would sell those fireworks at the Tennessee-Alabama line or whatever, they had to make a killing.
Isn't it illegal to shoot fireworks in Davidson County?
Davidson County, I believe.
I know Winston is.
Some rules were broken in my neighborhood, I can tell you.
Bunch of them. Hell, I done broke some rules when it comes to lighting fireworks, so I bet not even say that.
So what did you guys do? What was yours?
Well, go ahead, guys.
Mine was simple. I was like you, Willie. I used the last 4 days because we were out of the country for 2 weeks and then came back and then I had to fly to Baltimore, then fly back. So I was tired. I told the kids, I said, I'm not getting on a plane for a while. So I stayed home. I relaxed. I watched movies. I chilled on the back patio, went to the front patio, balcony. I just went around my house and relaxed. And chilled and 420'd it. And, you know, that was just me the whole 4 days, just relaxed, did some work around the house. My buddy came over, he and I, you know, chopped it up a little bit. So that was my fourth. I'm not too big on, you know, unless the kids are around, they want to go, the fireworks and stuff like that. I heard a bunch of them. I had my door closed to the back balcony. So I had it closed, but I hear all this stuff. I'm like, what in the hell is that? I know it's the 4th of July, but I think it's a little bit tad too early for this. So
what's the deal with you set off the firecrackers before it's dark? I don't get that.
I don't like,
It's a precursor to the fun that's coming.
Smoke. Exactly. Just hear noise. Yeah. So I hear all this stuff. Because remember, it rained. Did it rain earlier that day?
Yeah.
It rained earlier that day. So I'm thinking like, is that thunder out there? And it just kept going. I'm just sitting on the couch. So I finally open up the back slide door and I hear all this stuff. So I stick my head out. I'm like, man, they are really going at it. I'm hearing the fireworks from downtown. I don't see them, but I hear them from downtown. I'm like, man, I do not want to be nowhere near that place. I didn't want to be nowhere near downtown. So me, I relaxed. I watched me some movies. Watched Beverly Hills Cop. They got the new one. It's a new one out.
How is the new one?
It's good.
Is it? Like,
yeah, Willie, watch it.
Okay, all right.
It's good. Beverly Hills Cop.
I was going to watch
all the old characters
in
it.
I hope it's good. Yeah.
All the old characters are in it.
Because you worry a little bit when they wait that long. Axel's getting a little bit old.
Yeah, he's getting older, but he's still funny. Axel was Axel.
I actually
watched that.
I actually got to watch with my daughter. I showed my daughter the original Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay.
And she really liked it. So I was really excited about that.
But that's a
watching
plus,
it
then.
With her, she. I was thinking, is she going to think this is funny? Like, I'm sitting there doing
but
all the lines and everything.
I mean, it doesn't matter. That was a funny movie.
Yeah, it holds up.
Exactly.
It holds up. Sergeant
what'd you do,
Taggart.
Nick?
Yeah,
what'd
you do, Nick?
I'll say this much. My mom and dad went out to my uncle's house and got some white oak, some wood, okay? So it's a building project they're doing. My mom wants a new patio table. These pieces of wood are probably about a good this thick, if you see what I'm looking at.
About two inches thick. Yeah.
Pretty big slabs. They're 8-foot slabs. Heavy as all get out. Put it all together. It's probably about 700-800 pounds for the tabletop, that is. And so, there was some little, not termites, I guess you call it, but some little creatures inside of it. So my mom sprayed it with vinegar and stuff. That was their big project for 4th of July. But I was manual labor. I was, grabbing it, putting it on the horses, putting it back down on the horses, the wood horses, that is, to prop it up.
Oh, I was about to say real horses?
No, real horses. No. I don't live horseback, D-Base, I promise.
Hey, you said horses. Yeah. I'm like, damn.
The wooden horses that keep everything propped
up. Coming
up,
setting up in the stables behind the station.
Yeah, my horse downstairs in the first parking spot. I just sit there all day.
Reserve spot.
But anyways, so my parents, they are on this new project of a nice white oak table because I got a cousin that's getting married soon, so they're doing like a party this weekend, whatever.
Oh, cool.
But the legs come in Tuesday. They're metal legs. They're zigzag. They're kind of cool. But it's going to come down to the point, my dad will be out of town, so it'll be me possibly routing it into the bottom of the table and then basically having it flush, the legs have being flushed to the bottom of the table. And so that's my project. And so now I have two, it was a 5-foot slab of white oak, but now it's like 2.5 on each side, mm-hmm. so I can basically use it for my own project.
Maybe some more. Are you gonna do like a natural build a get a baseball bat out of that?
I might. I might
Wonder Boy.
Do some small little baseball bats. Give them a little souvenirs.
Put a little lightning bolt in
you're giving them ideas, man.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
white oak. I would think is pretty good wood.
It's probably valuable wood. Very
well,
valuable.
Nick already said he was gonna. He said he was gonna make me a pizza oven. You know what do you call
the
them,
little
Nick?
Holders? Pizza holders. You take them in and out of the oven.
Yeah, wooden ones, big ones. He said he was gonna make one. So we'll see. Chef Mason on there.
Yeah, we'll see what I can do with.
Yeah,
that.
He said okay. See what
and
he can
as
do
for Willie, I may have something up my sleeve for you. So this white oak, it's gonna go to good use. Let's put it that way.
All right, so you said Beverly Hills Cop. I actually watched.
Yeah, you
so
gotta
you
watch
like
the new
one.
The new one. You gotta watch the new one.
Any other movies that you saw over the course of the weekend, old or new? That
I saw The Watcher. It was a new movie, but it's kind of scary.
Yeah, okay. I'll pass on that.
You don't like watching scary movies?
I do. I don't mind it, but I get startled. As you can tell, some people come up behind me and try to tap me on the shoulder. I got earbuds on like this. I got to jump.
You get frightened.
I jump, yeah.
A little scary.
I like to make sure my P's and Q's are all good.
Pants.
You know what I mean?
A little scaredy pants.
I'm not that scared.
Yeah, you're scaredy pants, man.
I get startled, man. I get startled.
A little scaredy pants.
I rewatched one that it's one of those movies that I didn't see in the theater. I had seen probably 75% of it here or there in patches, but I'd never watched it all the way through. And I don't know why, but it just popped on one of the movie channels, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to dig in. I'm going to watch it. It's a little bit long. It was big at the time, but it's been sort of out of the loop for a while. But if you're still plugged in, you have DirecTV, so D-Mace, you've got this. Right?
Yes.
It's going to pop up. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You ever seen that?
I don't think
I saw
that
a long time ago.
Yeah, it's like 20 years old, or 25
old,
years old now. 2000,
old,
I think it was. I never watched the whole thing.
You didn't?
Because I've seen a lot of parts of it, and I've always enjoyed the action and stuff like that. But this time I was like, okay, I want to know who the characters are. What is the underlying story? All of that stuff. I enjoyed it. Hmm. That was a good rewatch for me. So
as for me, I had Vegas Vacation. That just popped on AMC. I was like, this is a good movie. Mm. Might as well.
Vegas Vacation.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm sad to say I've never watched that one.
Does
it hold up to the other? I love the Griswolds. We talked about it. D-Mace could have been like the Griswolds when he went on European vacation.
Pretty much.
Should have documented it, D-Mace. It'd have been great. Could have sold it to some
So
TV
Vegas
company.
Vacation is worth watching, you think?
I would say out of 1 out of 10, I'd give it probably about a 6. Maybe a 5.56. It's worth the watch if you have nothing on TV.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what it was.
Filling time.
There was nothing there. It's good filling time.
Okay. Hmm. All right. So just good enough.
Well, that's good. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what else did I watch this weekend. Gosh, I guess it wasn't memorable enough for
the F1 race?
Didn't watch the F1 race.
That
I did watch some a little bit of women's basketball. It was okay.
How about Caitlin Clark, the triple-double?
Yeah, she finally got a triple-double.
Yeah.
Finally.
And Angel Reese, she set a record for double-doubles already, 13, right?
13.
I believe so.
That's not a rookie record, right? That's
a league
record. That's amazing.
And then the young lady, I'm calling her a young lady, but she's older. She's probably a little bit younger than Asia's, got to be in her 30s because she's been in the league a minute, right? She's just, I mean, she is the best player in the WNBA. Asia, what is it? Asia Wilson? Asia Wilson. This chick's bad, man. Gosh, if you hadn't seen her play, you need to watch her play. She can straight up ball. All these girls can. I was watching because now, obviously, a lot of the talk is Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese. So I understand that. And they sort of comparing the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, the whole feud and everything. And it's obvious. I know why you say that. But I'm going to strip away the race thing. But just looking at those two, one seems to be more of a passer slash scorer. The other seems to be more of a dominant big woman in the middle.
Yeah. Rebounding
machine. Yeah, they don't represent, I think, truly what the Magic and Bird rivalry was.
They're not
going to
guard each other.
Yeah, they're not going to guard. Yeah, they don't truly represent what the Magic and Bird rivalry was. Because if you watched it, you knew exactly what it was. It was really L.A. versus Boston. It wasn't just Magic and Bird. It was L.A. versus Boston because it goes way back before Magic and Bird even steps on the court, on the NBA court. I like it because it just gives you another something to watch, you know, something to pay attention to what these two ladies and then the other ladies around them are doing. But then the chick out of the young lady out of USC. I mean, gosh, I don't know why her name's Juju. Juju. If you haven't seen this girl play, man, oh, man. She is, if you think Caitlin Clark is good, if you think Asia Wilson's good, if you think Angel Reese was good in high school, I mean, in college, this, they can't hold a candle to what she has the potential of doing. They're calling her basically the Michael Jordan. You got your Bird and your Magic, and then now we're just waiting for Michael Jordan to come into the league, which Juju was a freshman last year. So she, you may not see her for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Next 3 years.
I'm excited to see what she does.
Yeah, but this girl, I mean, she can flat out ball, like flat out ball. So I spent a lot of time watching clips of her too, just ball.
The one thing that I actually got out and about to do, I went to Predators Development Camp. We're going to talk about that some during the second hour, mm-hmm. to see some of the just the brand new, the real true young layer of draftees that they got, plus the guys that they drafted last year and some from the year before, but that 17 to 20, 21 maybe age group.
How did they look?
I thought they looked really good. We're going to talk about it more during the noon hour because it everybody's excited about what they did in free agency, exactly. as they should be, and there's going to be a lot of hype, a lot of expectations. That's another thing we're going to get into.
Somebody threw down a gauntlet today.
Yeah.
Somebody threw they down someone the- named Adam threw down a gauntlet today.
The new overnight guy. Yeah, that guy. True expectations.
Exactly.
He wants to set the expectation bar at a certain level. We're going to talk about that. But what I'm encouraged, and Barry Trotz joined our show on Wednesday, the last show that we did, and you and I got him to talk about this kind of vision as these older guys, because it's going to be the theme of the year. What do they got left? Stamkos, Marchessault, O'Reilly, all these guys that are in their 30s, can they take it all the way to the end, mm-hmm. right, in their 30s? And it's a legit question. Can you climb the mountain when you're that old without really a great nucleus of guys in the mid-20s? But Barry Trotz talked about the layers of the farm system right now, mm-hmm. and we saw the youngest layer over the weekend, and I thought they were pretty impressive. Now, what does that mean? Nothing, really. We had to see. But yeah. I do think they're very encouraged about the big picture with some of the guys that they have. We'll get into more detail during the next hour of the show. Teron Davenport will join us at 1 o'clock, and we'll continue to set the table for the coming training camp just a couple of weeks away now. Mm-hmm. I'm sure everybody's like, God, I got to get back.
Now, when do the Titans start camp early because they got a new coach? So when is it, like the
they set out the report dates. I don't remember exactly what day, but you're right. You get a couple extra days when you have a new staff.
Yeah,
somewhere around that 20 range. Yeah.
So
we'll get into that with Teron. And also we're going to use kind of this hour to talk about a couple of off-season NFL topics. And we're going to start with the Titans in the next segment. And that will be, who is the guy that they can't lose? Mm-hmm. On each side of the ball. They've had poor luck with injuries the last 3 years. We know the stat. They've had more man games lost. They've been more injured than any other team. They cited it when they decided to move on for Mike Vrabel. So can they stay healthy this year with the new staff? That's one thing. And they've got a lot of other things, maybe some new methods they're going to try mm-hmm. to keep people on the field. But who are the most indispensable players for the Titans? We're going to talk about that in our next segment. Speaking of that, a concept from the MMQB podcast that was interesting is load management. Now, D-Mace has been the unfortunate purchaser of NBA tickets where yes. he's that guy that goes to a game to see his favorite player with his son DJ, and that night they're not playing. It drives the fans crazy. But the NBA has sort of dug in. They've leaned into this works. Mm-hmm. Over 82 games, we need to do some load management to get ready for the postseason. If we're going to go all the way, we got to have to lose the battle some nights to win the war. And the question was brought up on the MMQB podcast. Is this something we'll see in pro football someday? Mm. It's 17 games now. Someday, pretty soon, probably it's going to be 18. And so is this something a team should think about? Right now, nobody's doing it. The NHL really resists doing it. You don't really see that in the NHL. Should they think about it a little bit more? We're going to talk about that later in the hour, too. So we're just getting cranked up. We're going to talk Titans on the other side. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. All right. Just a little recommendation here. If you ever want to get a little spontaneous dance party going in your house, or you got a little party going, just kick this on. You'll be all right. You agree with me on that, DJ?
No, this should make you dance the minute it comes on.
This will get people moving.
Doing something.
It won't clear the
floor. John Travolta or
something. It's easy to dance to this song. It's just nice and it's not too fast paced.
Like Saturday night. Hey, this is what they should be playing. This should be like echoing from the skies today. Hot
because it is hot stuff in our city.
Stuff today.
Good grief, man.
It
can't
is
last,
hot.
I can't last 30 minutes out there. It actually was like 90, 91. I was like, this is great.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday, I was out a little
bit. Oh, yeah. Yesterday, it wasn't too bad.
But like you expect it to be 96 and above every day. You just, when it's not, you get excited.
But listen, I'm not complaining because you know what, Willie? I hate, and I mean, I hate the cold weather.
I would rather be in a hot situation than a freezing situation.
Yeah, whew, man.
Yeah, I don't like the cold.
I will say, over the 4th of July, my buddy Alex, as he drove me back to the house from one of our friends' place to swim, we stopped at Baskin Robbins because everything was closed. But man, it's hot outside. We can get some Baskin Robbins. I end up getting a pint of ice cream, right?
Gosh, man.
He ends up getting a quart of ice cream. I'm like, man, you need a quart? You really need that much? He goes, it's for tomorrow, the day after? I was like, oh.
Store it up.
He's thinking ahead of time because it's hot. It's hot outside.
So. It's good stuff. William D. Mays brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. All right, so D. Mays.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I think the Titans are due to have a little better fortune in health. They have been snake bit, and I know that they've done the studies and they think they can help, but I also think sometimes you got to be a little lucky to stay healthy. So let's start there. Do you agree with that? Like, that would go a long way as to how competitive they can be this year.
Yeah, they have to. This team has to stay completely healthy because of the depth as we perceive it to be now. It's not there, the depth on their team. Now, we've talked about the depth of their team the last two or three seasons. And, you know, it has been one reason we've talked about it because of the massive injuries that the Titans have had, where they had to not only go to the second unit, sometimes even the third unit, and then sometimes even having to get someone off of somebody else's practice squad and then, you know, inserting them into your lineup to play that next following week. So over the last two seasons, this team has been injury prone more than any other team in the National Football League. Yeah, this team can't survive, I don't think, if they have too many injuries, especially not now, even though they are, as we look at them, especially over the draft and then free agency, they are trying to build the depth of this team back up. So, but it's not going to help if you then, you know, have these same injuries that you've been having over the course of the last two seasons. You can't have those injuries now when you're trying to build up your roster. You know, so it's going to be critical for the Titans to stay healthy, especially on that front line. Those front line guys, the 11 on offense and 11 on defense, those guys got to stay healthy.
Yes, and we know that it's inevitable you're going to have some issues with that. So let's prioritize. If you could pick one person on each side of the ball, and I say to you, this guy is going to magically be on the field for 17 games. Who would it be? Let's start with the defense. Who would that be?
This defense for me, man, it was – at first I thought Jeffrey Simmons. And then I thought, listen, the way Denard Wilson, I think, is going to have this defense going from a defensive line standpoint, they're going to be rotating a lot of guys. You don't want to lose Jeffrey Simmons, but, you know, if you do lose him, I think – you know, those guys will continue to rotate and they will continue to be able to do what they need to do up front. Because even last year and the year before that, listen, when those guys got hurt, when Jeffrey went down, guys were able to step in and get the job done. Now they had the Nico Autry last season, so it took a little bit of stress off of Jeffrey Simmons. But if they can get the young fella, you know, playing this season, and you know, the other guys around him, Harold Landry, guys like that, stepping up once again, then I think losing, if indeed you lose Jeffrey Simmons a game or two, I don't think it'd be that big of a deal. But I'm going to secondary, and I'm going Legarius Sneed. If they lose him in that secondary, even though I do like Roger McCreary, I think he's a hell of a player, but Roger McCreary is set for – Roger McCreary is your nickel back. I think he thrives. Not that he can't play outside, because I'm not going to sit here and say he can't. He's done a damn good job at playing outside when he had to, but I think he's more of your slot guy. He could be one of the, if not the best slot corner in the National Football League if you just keep him there playing in that Denard Wilson's defense. But I think Legarius Sneed is the one guy they can't lose because, again, they don't have – the depth that they're going to need at that position. Now, they got guys behind them, but not guys that I think that have proven themselves.
So you think Sneed is more valuable than Simmons in your mind?
As far as, like, to me, Sneed can't afford – they can't afford to miss – he can't afford to miss 2, 3, 4 games of the season. I think Jeffrey Simmons can. They can mask it a little bit. But they got to have, with the receivers that are in their conference, with the receivers that they are going to play, they're going to have their secondary intact for the majority of the season. And if you have a guy like Legarius Sneed, who you just paid all of this money to be your shutdown corner, because when you have a shutdown corner, as you know this, Willie, there are things you are afforded to do on the defensive side of the ball. When you have one guy that can just lock down one side of the field, you can afford to do everything. You can afford to do other things within the secondary that may help you on the other side. If you don't have that guy, man, it's hard trying to come up with coverages to shut down these high-powered wide receivers that they're going to be facing this season. So, to me, Legarius Sneed is the one guy that I do believe needs to stay healthy for pretty much the whole season. Now, if he misses a game, okay, misses a few plays here and there, I get it. That's fine. But he cannot be a guy that they cannot – he cannot be a guy that they have to line up, you know, week in and week out and not have on the field.
I think that's a great philosophical question, is if you had to play one game without either Simmons or Sneed, who could you mask easier? You're saying you could mask having Simmons out for a game easier than Sneed. Because mm-hmm. my answer was going to be Simmons, mm-hmm. just because I've been watching the last couple of years.
And I get it.
Once he has gone down and he's tried to play hurt mm-hmm. and then eventually had to shut it down, you just see an enormous drop-off there. And I still envision, if the Titans are going to be competitive, a big, big year from him. Obviously, you need both is the easy answer. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is on your side is the psychological effect, the noise that you will hear if Sneed is injury prone.
Whew.
We spent all this money. Mm-hmm. Why did we go get this guy? He's not healthy. I told you his knees weren't going to hold up. Whatever, you could just envision some stuff, and there will be a lot of questions they have to answer. That's not healthy to have going on. Whereas if Simmons gets hurt, I think it'll just be a little less of it. Mm-hmm. It'll be a frustration, but not the same kind of thing, because this was such a big story, the trade to go get Sneed mm-hmm. at the stage that they were in. So I can buy that.
Now, listen, don't get me wrong. Not having Jeffrey Simmons in the lineup is a loss to the Tennessee
sure,
Titans.
Sure, sure. I think it's one of those two. I don't know that there's another guy you can pick on the defensive side.
I thought about Harold Landry, but they didn't, you know, they spent the season without having Harold Landry. And then the first half of the season, he was still getting himself acclimated to coming off that knee surgery. So he wasn't up to full strength. And then when he became, you know, more of 100% toward the latter part of the season, you can see exactly what Harold Landry brings to the table. So I thought about Harold Landry too. But outside of Harold Landry and Jeffrey Simmons and Sneed, I don't see anybody else that they couldn't, you know, afford to lose. Now, you want all 11 guys healthy, or 12, 13, whoever, as far as your corners you're going to bring in for third down. You want these guys healthy, but, you know this game, pretty much nobody you know, goes throughout the season without having some type of injury. Now, it may not cost you to, it may not causes you to miss games, but you're going to deal with injury. But the two guys, at least one for me, is Najarius Sneed, and then obviously for you, Willie, is Jeffrey Simmons. Yeah, you take those two guys off that defense, man, they're going to struggle and struggle mightily. At least that's what I believe.
Oh, yeah. A big year from those two is a must, I would think, if this team is going to take a step forward and be more competitive than a lot of people believe. All right, let's flip to the offensive side of the ball. Who's your answer, the most indispensable guy that cannot afford to go down with an injury?
So you would think I would say it would be Will Levis. I think everybody would say, man, Will can't go down. I mean, if he goes down, his offense is, you know, it's going to be sputtering. But I don't see it that way because I think Mason Rudolph, he's not a starter. I understand that. But I think he's more than a capable backup that can come in and get you 2 to 3 wins if need be.
Which is what he did last year.
Exactly, which is what he did for Pittsburgh last year. He came in and he won some games for him, put him in a good position to make the playoffs. So having Mason Rudolph as Will's backup, I am not that concerned. Again, I don't want Will to go down. I want him to be in the lineup for 17 games and, you know, plus, meaning playoffs. But if he's not in underneath center for a game, two games, I'm not going to panic because I think they can work around not having Will Levis underneath center. I think they still will be able to do some things with Mason Rudolph that they were able to do with Will Levis. Now, his arm strength is not like Will Levis's, but you still can, you know, orchestrate your offense the way you need to with Mason Rudolph underneath center. The one guy that I think they can't lose is either – it has to be either Cushenberry or why am I forgetting the tackle name now?
Latham?
Yeah, okay. Latham. Either Cushenberry or Latham. Those are one of the two guys they can't afford to lose. I mean, they can't afford – to miss a game. Those guys can't afford to miss a game because, to me, the offensive line's problem, it's been several, but the one thing that this offensive line has been able to do is what? Stay healthy. I know people are probably screaming, block! Yeah, I know that.
Right, that's been a problem too.
That's been a problem, but they haven't been able to stay healthy. That offensive line over the last 2 years have not been able to stay healthy. So, to me, if they end up losing one of these guys, then they're going to go through this whole trying to get reacclimated to another guy they got to put in there as a starter for a game or two, and then they got to possibly try to change some things. So, to me, losing Cushenberry is the equivalent, or losing J.C. Latham is the equivalent of losing Ryan Tannehill when he was sort of at his peak, when he was playing at his best. You couldn't lose him because you knew the offense was going to be different without him in the lineup. If Cushenberry or J.C. Latham goes down, this offense is going to look different because now you've taken away two of the offensive linemen that they depended heavily on, guys that upgraded your offensive line. If you don't have them, if you don't have Cushenberry underneath center, more importantly, Cushenberry, but if you don't have Cushenberry underneath center and Latham on the left side blocking for his quarterback, it's not going to look good.
Cushenberry is a really interesting answer. I had not thought about him. I was thinking, you know, just like most of us do, you think about the line as a unit. Mm-hmm. It is essential that you find some stability on the offensive line this year, short term and long term. Like that, we know that if they crumble again on the offensive line, it's going to be another long year. They'd be lucky to win 6 games if that happens again, if you have the nightmare, especially with the new investment that you've made with your first round pick being the guy you hope is playing left tackle, the first pick last year, Skoronski, as your left guard, and the money you invested in Cushenberry. You hope that is going to give you an upgrade. And if you don't get it, that could be disastrous. So stability there, I think, is a great answer. You know, the obvious answer is Levis for sure, but I'm with you. I wasn't going to say Levis because I agree that if you had a game or two or three that Rudolph is your quarterback, I don't think that's a disaster.
No.
That's not a disaster, especially where Levis is. Maybe even giving him some extra rest, et cetera, would not be the worst thing for him long term. It's not ideal, but it's not the worst thing either, I think. I could live with that. So I do think the answer for sure is on the offensive line. I hadn't thought about Cushenberry. I was thinking more Skoronski, Latham. Mm-hmm. But I think that's that is the way it's got to go. You've got to find a way that you can start having a foundation being built to where this is our offensive line, or at least the left side,
yeah,
from the center over to the left. This is what we're going with, and we are going to win with this group.
Because you got to understand, the right side of this offense is going to be a work in progress. Whether it's Daniel Brunskill at right guard, or Dylan Raitens at right tackle, or Nicholas Petit at right tackle. However this thing ends up, it's still going to be a carousel at trying to find out who is going, what is the better marriage? Is it Brunskill and Raitens? Is it Brunskill and Nicholas? Is it Nicholas and Raitens and guard? How are they going to figure that out? That's why, to me, you know what your left side looks like. You can't afford any one of those guys to go down, because as you see it, as you're putting together your offense, you know that your left side is Latham, Skoronski, and Cushenberry. You know you got a damn good left side. Your right side, you're still trying to figure that out, but I think you will. And in figuring that out, you can't afford to lose anybody on the left side, because now you got to start switching.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why. So to me, that is the answer for sure. Now, another thing that has, as we talked about at the top of the show, is sort of related to this topic, but we never see it in the NFL. Are we going to see it someday? And that is the concept of load management. Most of the time, it is shrugged off from the get-go. It's, we got to win games. We only have 17. No way, Jose. I'm not sitting a guy that's healthy enough to play. It's hard enough to keep the guys on the field as it is. Connor Orr from the MMQB challenges this theory, and it's just an interesting discussion to have, and I'm wondering, someday could it get to a point where it is a smart play to do this, and you will win the long-term battle even if you have to rest a guy that could play otherwise. I don't know if anybody would have the guts to do it, but we're going to discuss it. And he says nobody will anytime soon, but I wonder if we'll get to that point. And there's a little hockey-related part of this, too, as well as it relates to the Predators. So we'll come back and talk about that. Load management, will it ever, like it is in the NBA, be used as a tool in the NFL or even the NHL?
Well, the Tides, it seems like the last 2 years they could have used a little bit of load management on some players.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that. It is. They got some veteran guys, for sure. All right, stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on 102.5 The Game.
Back at you, Willie and D. Mace on 102.5 The Game here. Willie had a chance to watch the developmental crew play this weekend. So what did you think about them, Willie? I know they have a lot of young talent that they may depend on this season. When you are the second oldest team in the National Hockey League, you're going to need some of those young fellas to be ready just in case you have to bring them up or they have to play in a game or five this season. But what did you see from the young guys?
You know, D-Mace, the last couple of days of the camp, you had the game on Saturday, and then Friday they had a real fun three-on-three tournament where they divided the ice in two, and they had a sort of a smaller space to work with, and they had a three-on-three tournament. So I had 2 days where I really watched this group of players that they have just drafted, and I thought it was interesting that they took a lot of the younger players at Milwaukee and did not expect them to come because they've had two long playoff runs the last couple of years. They let those guys rest. So I thought it was a pretty impressive group that I saw. And it didn't include some of the top prospects that they have, like Askarov, obviously. Joachim Kemmel, first-round pick, who's still just 20 years old. Zach LaRue is just 21 years old. Fedor Svechkov, another first-round pick. Reed Schaefer, all of these guys were young enough to be in with this group, but they let them have the rest of that summer off and get ready for training camp, which is coming in September. So I thought, all things considered, it was a very good showcase of the deep talent pool that they have. When you consider just like 2 years ago, Luke Evangelista was playing in that game. Yaroslav Askarov was playing in that game. So you were left with the very recent draft picks, guys that were just drafted a couple weeks ago, Igor Surin, who was the first-round pick, who's still just 17 years of age. I was wondering what he was going to look like. You had last year's first-round pick when the draft was in Nashville, Matthew Wood, another guy from that draft, two other guys, defenseman, Tanner Molendijk, who was the first-round pick they got in the Matthias Ekholm trade. And then this kid, Andrew Gibson, that was drafted in the second round in Nashville. The Predators wanted to pick him. The Red Wings beat them to it. And so they made a deal a few weeks ago and traded for Gibson to get him in the fold. So let's start there. I think it was a really good look at some long-range prospects, and some might be a little longer than others. Igor Surin, who is fresh in everybody's mind because he was just picked. Mm-hmm. Russian kid. And this is what I was impressed with, D-Mace. He was a strong kid for his age. People were bouncing off of him. He's built like a little tank. And he's not little. He's 6'1". But he's very stocky for a kid who's only 17. You see so many 17-year-olds that haven't filled out, right? And you're looking at the frame and you're saying, okay, is he, you know, in 2 or 3 years, is this guy going to be a lot more manly, if you will, you know, just maturing mm-hmm. physically than he is at 17. A lot of kids are like this. This kid is already, I think, physically stocky. He's got country strong kind of stuff. He loves to hit. He's got great energy. He's a ways away from helping the Nashville Predators, but I think the first impression for him was a very good one at this camp. The other thing that I thought, makeup-wise, mm-hmm. he tried to do all of the interviews in English.
How did that go?
It was hilarious, uh-huh. honestly, because everybody kind of, and I admire the people that were covering camp, like Robbie was in there, Nick Kieser was in there, a lot of people from our station, and they were encouraging of him, right? And they were patient with him. And he said right off the bat, I'm going to try this, mm-hmm. and I might have to ask you to repeat the question. Yeah, you might have to repeat it. Mm-hmm. I might have to go really slow. I might completely lose it, but I'm going to try. And I love that about him. He was just wide-eyed, and he would just fall back on simple things like, look, I'm playing hard. When can I hit people? I mean, he has some personality to him. But I think when a guy does that, he's going to be on the fast track to being more comfortable sooner. As I understand it, I think he's going to go back to Russia mm-hmm. and play for the next year or two. He's got, I think, a couple years on his contract, although in these times, it does feel like you can get out of that a little easier than maybe you used to 5 or 6 years ago, where the KHL would really force the players to honor their contracts. Now it seems like a little easier to get out of that. We'll see how it unfolds, but he made a very good first impression. Matthew Wood, who is a big 6'5 kid, he, I think, has a little more long range to go. I think he's more of a project, and I think that's the general rule that a lot of people say about taller players. They take a little longer to develop. You can see the skill. He's not what I would call like a mean guy that just, you know, rams into everybody. He's a tall guy, but it's almost like a Magic Johnson. He's tall, but he's skilled. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to find his way of how best to use his tools. He's going to transfer to the University of Minnesota. He's another guy that I think if you're looking for, hey, Dallas's first-round pick just the other year, he jumped right into the lineup. I don't think Matthew Wood's that guy. I think down the road, he can turn into a very, very good player, but it's going to take a little longer, I think, with him. But both of those guys, I think, are definitely considered, as they should be, first-round picks that are prospects. They were together on the same line in the Future Stars game, and they immediately, along with the second-round pick, Teddy Stiga, connected for 2 goals early in the game. So those guys flashed, as you would hope they would. I think the two guys, D-Mace, that are the most on the fast track, and I think everybody in the organization agrees that the bright side for Tanner Molendijk mm-hmm. and this kid that they just traded for from Detroit, Andrew Gibson.
Molendijk was last year's first-round pick, right?
Right. He was the second of the two. Wood was the first, and then they took Molendijk. That was the Oilers' first-round pick they got from Matthias Ekholm.
Okay.
They love Molendijk. Last year, Molendijk made such a great impression as an 18-year-old that they considered actually keeping him around for a few games just to give him a taste of it, just to see what it would look like before they send him back to his junior team. I think that question is going to be open again this year. He has made another big step forward. Even though he had some injuries last year, he looks bigger, he looks stronger, and he has got very noticeable elite skating skills. He scored a goal. He's a left-handed shot. They put him with this kid, Andrew Gibson. Now, I had never seen Gibson play before. When they announced that trade, and you were on vacation at the time, D-Mace, I was like, I never heard of this guy. But immediately people were saying, keep an eye out. They like this guy. And you could notice with what they gave, they threw a second-round pick at Detroit along with a prospect to get this guy.
So that's how much they liked him.
Yes. And he appears to fit very well with Molendijk. He and Molendijk are about the same age, 19 years old. I think that they can envision these two guys being an actual pair that plays for the Predators someday and hopefully for a long time. You had, for example, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber from the same draft way back when, and those guys were a fantastic tandem for a long time. They have had the ability to develop great defensemen, lefty-righty. But I think their skill sets mesh very well, and I like what I saw. This kid Gibson's another guy that has a great personality. Certainly was wide-eyed, answered all the questions, talked about growing up in Windsor, Ontario, where he was watching Ryan Ellis, who played for the Predators.
Right across the bridge.
Right across the bridge. And so that's where Ryan Ellis was playing. He said Ryan Ellis was his favorite player. Now, he's a lot taller than Ryan Ellis. And he goes with the mustache and not the full beard. He's not quite the same kind of player. But I see what they see there. I'm probably most excited about those two guys. And I know everybody's like, well, what about the forwards? They need forwards. But I think this leads me to the other part of this. Because D-Mace, we talked about this last week. We talked to Barry Trotz. His idea is when you have a veteran team, right, at some point as they age, they need to be taken – Their responsibilities need to go down a little bit, and they've got to be replaced by younger players who get more responsibility as the time ticks. That sounds like a good vision, and hopefully it can come to fruition.
Yeah, I think as you're starting to, you know, put your team together, however you're going to do it, whether you do it, you know, in a way that's going to showcase your youth right away, which means you're going to have some growing pains, or, you're doing it the way that it seems like the Predators are doing. You know, they're adding more veteran guys, which means they are veteran top heavy with this roster. So however you construct this roster, you're going to have, you know, those guys that are able to step in and, you know, get the job done if you're top line guys or your older guys or not. So, you know, having the futures game is good to see some of these young guys that could potentially, you know, if not this year, more than likely it won't be this year.
Yeah.
But if not this year, then the year after or the year after that, because the way this team is constructed, they're going to need these young fellas to step up and help as they start to, you know, add years to the guys that they've already brought on this roster, because the guys they brought in are in their late 20s or they're in their mid 30s getting ready, you know, they're on the other side of the heel rather than on the front side.
So that leads us into I think our next segment, which Adam Vingan was talking about, the expectation levels. If you believe that with Stamkos and Marchessault at the stage of the career they're in, plus Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, that you've got 2, maybe 3 years with that nucleus being able to really help you. Plus, Juuse Saros is going to be 29 this year. He's going to go into his 30s. You hope that his prime extends for that long. Once you get past that, and as you're moving through that process, you've got to have some reinforcements from your farm system. And they, unlike a team like Edmonton that is trying to recycle every year veteran players, they've got to go get guys who are on one-year deals because they have depleted their farm system. They don't have those guys coming up. That's what's unique about the Predators. So it's essential that they get production out of these guys. Now, they have three tiers to me of how they're going to do it. The guys I just discussed from the Futures game, those guys, other than maybe Molendijk, who I think is a unique guy, I think he could make it quicker than people, quicker than a normal prospect will take, right? And that's always gold if a guy's ready that early. Philip Forsberg popped when he was 20, right? He wasn't ready when he was 19, but all of a sudden, boom, when he was 20, he made it. So it could happen at any time. We don't know. But those guys that we saw last week are probably 2, 3, 4 years down the road before we really know what they have. The immediate people that they have to keep an eye on this year. Evangelista, you hope, doesn't take a step back, right? You never know about the sophomore slump, whatever. That could, these can happen. He's not there yet, right? But he had a very good rookie year, and you hope he builds on that. He's definitely
and
part
he's
of the plan.
He's 22 years old.
Yes, no question. Mm. He is in the plans. Juuso Parsonen, Phil Tomasino, two guys that they have been very high on that climbed a little bit way up the mountain last year, but were not ready to climb all the way up the mountain. What happens to them? Do they learn from their experience last year when they went back to Milwaukee and helped them, help really lead them on a playoff run? And do they come back bigger, stronger, more determined to break through? That's a huge question, I think, for this team. There is space on the roster for at least one of them to be in there. I hear Barry Trotz mentioning both of them, so I think they're both still in the plans, at least as possibilities. But they're at the point, D-Mace, it's almost like they are, say, seniors in college. Like, it's time. It's time. They're 23, and it's time to say, I'm an NHL player. Because, number one, is there that much more room to grow? Still some, but you're closer to the finished product than you are when you're 20, 21. You can't just say, well, he's young, he's going to make it. The other part of it is contractually. They're at a stage now where if you wanted to send them to Milwaukee, now they've got to go through waivers. You can't just keep going up and down from Milwaukee and say, well, he's not ready to send him back to Milwaukee. It's not that simple anymore. So you got to make decisions on these guys. So Parsonen, Tomasino, Evangelista, that's the older tier. Then you've got the middle tier of guys we haven't seen yet that weren't at the prospect camp this past week, but they were playing in Milwaukee as very young players in the AHL. And I'm talking about Joachim Kemmel, Fedor Svechkov, Zach LaRue, Reed Schaefer. That's really the core there. And that is a group that I think could get into the mix this year. So you really have three tiers of prospects that over the next 2 or 3 years, are they all going to make it? No, not at all. Mm-hmm. But you hope that 2 or 3 become first-rate players that really help a winning team. And then you get some complementary players that also are good NHL players out of this mix that can play a role for you as the rest of the roster ages. That's the vision. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great vision, but you know, is it going to come to fruition? I don't know. But we know that the expectation level is going to be high this year, which is something that you heard Adam say earlier today.
Yeah, I think the expectation level, considering what they have done, and you spelled it all out, Willie, the expectation level is going to be high. I think higher than it has been in some years. I think other than the year after they went to the Stanley Cup, I think this upcoming season, considering what they've done in free agency, I think the expectation levels are going to be that high. And is it fair? I don't know. Because you look at what Barry essentially has said is, listen, I see a 1 to 3 year window here. And when he first made those moves, that's what I said. I said, these are moves for 1 to 3 years. He'll worry about year 4 and 5. He's hoping that those younger guys, by then, they're ready to go and they can just sort of slide in seamlessly and keep the winning ways going. But make no mistake about it. We need to win a championship within these 1 to 3 years. Now, we'll worry about what's going to happen after the third year. We should be set up perfectly to segue into those younger guys after 3 years. But 1 to 3 years, we need to be on the stage where we were in 2017, the Stanley Cup stage. We need to be there in these one or three years. Now, Adam on the Chase and Big Joe show, he said something different.
Okay, and so when we come back, let's hear what Adam said, and we are going to discuss what's the right expectation now that the Predators have made the blitz in free agency mm-hmm. and gone for it. We just laid out that they've got the farm system long range loaded up, and they still got plenty of draft picks in the next couple years, too, to continue to stock up in the farm system. So how do they go about it, and what is the right expectation level to try to win a championship in the next 3 to 5 years? We're going to talk about it when we come back.